Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and we are just filled to the rafters with people today, aren't we, Stone?
We certainly are. We have a studio full of bright, passionate folks that have a lot of compelling stories to share, and we should get right to it. First up on Atlanta Business Radio today, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast a gentleman with Comcast Spotlight, also with Atlanta Broadcasting Advertising Club. Looking forward to learning more about that, Mr. Sean Jones. How you doing, man?
I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
Well, we are delighted to have you. We've all heard of Comcast Cable.
Yes.
But tell us about Comcast Spotlight. Mission, purpose, what are you guys out there trying to do for folks?
Comcast Spotlight is the advertising arm of Comcast. We have every cable network we insert on. We have 162 Braves games, Final Four. We are the home of sports and the home of, a reach vehicle for advertisers all across Atlanta.
Now, is Comcast Spotlight national advertising, or is that localized in any given market?
The thing is, we're one shoe fits all. We can do national, we can do regional, wow. We can go down to,
neighborhood, right?
Exactly. Well, to the zip code. Close.
So you can get very targeted with your efforts.
Yes, and we're working on getting it more and more targeted as we go along.
So is there a kind of a consultative side to this business? You sit down and try to get your arms around this kind of people that we're trying to reach and then help us map that out? Or how does the front end of the relationship work with you guys?
Well, it depends on who you want. For example, if you have a plumber who has a very small radius of consumers, we can target that area. Now, if we have somebody like Hyundai that wants to reach the entire DMA or regionally, we can accommodate them as well.
Right, because historically, advertising on a broadcast network, there's a lot of waste. Because like you said, the plumber only does exactly. Sandy Springs, but then they're forced to advertise all over Atlanta, where 90% of the people would never consider
it. And we eliminate a lot of that waste with our, we call them zone buys. Mm-hmm. So you can target, if you're in Noonan, we can target Noonan. If you're in Athens, we can target Athens, so on and so forth.
But you get the power of television advertising.
Exactly. I mean, it looks exactly like a spot would on the Super Bowl, except you're only on Noonan and you're in the Final Four, let's say 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Now, you were slinging an acronym around a minute ago. What was it, DMA?
DMA. DMA. Designated Market Area. Atlanta's DMA, runs all the way to, touches just south of Tennessee, just west of South Carolina, all the way to somewhere between here and Macon.
And you're kind of big on these acronyms. What's this ABAC? The B is broadcasting, right? This is a whole other effort that you are thoroughly involved in.
Yes, I'm president of the Atlanta Broadcasting Advertising Club. We're the largest advertising entity in the Southeast. We do a lot of social events, but we also endow three different scholarships, two at the University of Georgia, one at Georgia State, and now we also now have the largest mentorship advertising program in the country.
Mm. Wow.
With Georgia.
Mentorship.
Mentorship.
Yeah, walk us through that a little bit.
Well, in August, I'll go up to the University of Georgia. They have a wonderful advertising program up there. I'll present our program. What we do is we pair advertising students up with professionals so they get a taste of real life, not just academic life. So they'll come down to some of our events. They'll do shadow days at an advertising agency or a TV station.
How cool is that?
Or a radio station, if you guys are interested. You guys could get involved, too. So
now you know where we live, so I guess exactly. We have to do it, right?
Exactly. Well, the members of ABAC are most every radio station in Atlanta, TV stations, and all the advertising agencies in Atlanta as well. So it's a big group. It's a fun group. We're very community-driven, and it's something we're really proud of, and we give out our first scholarship to our mentee next week. So I'm speaking up at the Georgia Ad Club dinner next week.
Wow, this is right in your wheelhouse, man.
No, I love it. How have you seen advertising? We have a lot of PR people in the studio, but we don't have many advertising people. How have you seen advertising change over the years, with the advent of social media and the internet and stuff?
Well, it's interesting because Twitter has kind of become an advocate of live television, right?
Right. Now it's like that second screen.
Yeah, it's a second screen. So you can have a conversation with an entire community, a national community, about what's happening on The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Hey, did you believe that shot LeBron James just said? That's unbelievable. And you can talk to thousands of people about this at the same time. So in some ways, you know, there's a lot of fragmentation, and Comcast obviously is part of the fragmentation with all of our hundreds of stations that we have. But the dialogue has moved forward with social media because, you know, TV is still water cooler talk, right? I mean, everybody wants to know about what happened on Mad Men during the premiere last week. What's going on in the news, what's happening, you know, particularly in sports, the Final Four, the NBA playoffs are coming up. The Hawks may or may not be relevant in that space. But
they're still relevant. They're in the playoffs.
They're in the playoffs against the Pacers, so there's going to be relevance there. But social media has become a nice complement to television.
Well, I think that your career has interesting – you get to look at this through multiple lenses, right? You have your day job with Comcast. You're working, mentoring, advertising people. And then also you're a blogger.
Yes, I have a food blog as well. When I turned 40, my midlife crisis wasn't a sports car or a divorce, so I'd figured doing a food blog would be a much cheaper way to try a new endeavor.
Now, do you attack that in the same manner as you would one of your advertising clients? Or is this kind of like just a passion project?
Well, growing up, I wanted to be a journalist, and I'd gotten to advertising, and that kind of went by the wayside, so I decided I wanted to write again. And it's become mildly successful. I was at a client 2 weeks ago, Piedmont Hospital's agency, and one of the account people there actually was a regular reader of my blog, which had never happened. So I didn't know
you were a celebrity.
You're a micro celebrity.
I'm at either D or E level. I'm not sure where I am yet, but we're getting there. But it's been a fun endeavor, and I get a lot of my clients involved. Right now, we're doing a taco contest, the best taco in Atlanta, and you know, in part.
I have a submission.
Absolutely, please.
Yeah, Tequila, right down there on Hammond Drive. You ever been there?
I have not.
Tequila Taqueria. It's in Sandy Springs Circle.
Bang Bang Shrimp. They have a BLT taco.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's my nomination.
Right, the BLT taco at Tequila. So I've done that, and it's really helped me actually develop some of my relationships and sales with Comcast deeper as well, because people. I have clients texting me on the weekends, hey, I'm having an anniversary this week. What do you think I should do? Uh-huh. So it's also deepening my relationships in the community as well.
So this Broadcasting and Advertising Club, you guys get together on a regular rhythm? You have Margarita Mondays, or how does all that work?
We have about five signature events. Our biggest event is called Meltdown, which is the biggest media party in the Southeast. We do it at the Anzi Country Club, which is currently under construction. But they'll be ready by our party in August. And this year we'll probably have about 600 to 700 people there. And the theme is going to be The Walking Dead. So AMC is actually providing us zombies.
Oh, wow.
So we're gonna have a coat and tie ball, right? And there's going to be dead people walking around with missing hands.
And they're not going to be servers?
Yeah, you just have to watch where you walk, I guess. But, you know, we try to do a fun theme like that every year, and we hope to have a couple of the stars from the show, because we've heard that they're actually going to be filming in town during that week.
Oh, great.
So we have a lively social aspect. It's very much a networking industry. It's, you know, who you know and is a big part of it, and getting out there and networking and meeting people, it's a fun industry to be in.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more about Comcast Spotlight here in town, what type of businesses do you target? As advertisers?
Well, we have so many platforms and so many levels of who we can reach and how we reach them. We have something for everybody. Somebody wants to spend $3 million, we have something for them. Somebody wants to spend $300, we have something for them as well.
Now, when you talk about targeting, how targeted, like what's the most crazy specific target you've ever done?
You know, reaching men can be difficult sometimes. So, you know, sports is a very cyclical thing, right? We have, in the summer, we only have baseball. Okay, we have World Cup, but World Cup's kind of targeted to a special kind of person. But then in January, we'll have football, we'll have basketball, we'll have college basketball. There's a lot of ways to go. So it depends on the time of the year. It's, you know, men tend to be the tougher target. Women... Our women's ratings usually outweigh our men's by a decent amount, but sports are a great
There's
way to
more go choices to advertise for women than men on yeah. television.
Absolutely.
Now, before we wrap, I want to make sure that we underscore this. This Broadcasting and Advertising Club, there's a philanthropic dimension to that gathering as well,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, well, we have three scholarships. We've endowed two scholarships at the University of Georgia. We have a leadership scholarship, a mentor scholarship. And at UGA, at Georgia State, we have a scholarship for their marketing program.
I think that's fantastic. All right, let's make sure that we leave our listeners with contact details for anybody who wants to have a meaningful conversation with you or somebody on your team about Comcast Spotlight, or that might be interested in the Broadcasting and Advertising Club.
You can reach me. My email is Sean, S-E-A-N, the good old Irish way, underscore Jones, the number 2, at cable.comcast.com. And if that's too much for you, my personal email is scjones8@live.com.
Well, thanks for coming down and hanging with us, man, and making the trip all the way from the 11th floor. That's, we
appreciate it, neighbors.
Can you give the website of the advertising club?
www.abac-online.org.
And then your blog?
My blog is www.thedryrub.blogspot.com. That's blogspot.com.
And that covers Atlanta restaurants?
Yeah, and I did. I've done some San Francisco stuff on there, and
wherever you happen to be traveling.
If I'm traveling, I got lucky enough to be at the French Laundry last summer, which is world famous. And I was like, well, if I get in there, I got to blog about it. Right?
You don't want to miss this opportunity.
A lot of pressure there. So yeah, when I travel, I'll be in New York next month, and I think we're going to do Peter Luger's.
Oh, nice.
Which will be
nice. Well, it's been fun having you on, and I think we got to have you back. Maybe bring some of your pals from the Broadcasting and Advertising Club.
Or one of the people who won the scholarship.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You up for that? That'd make for kind of a cool segment, wouldn't it?
All right. Let's do it.
All right, babe. You going to hang out with us for a little while we visit with our other guests?
Absolutely.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us from New South Construction Company, the president, the grand poobah, the man in charge, Mr. Doug Davidson. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me here today.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. What did you learn in that last segment?
I learned that Sean has a lot more fun than we do doing construction. We don't hang out at country clubs party and we build them, but watching TV and evaluating it. So
how's the building going on in town?
Building is much more exciting and a lot more of it out there right now than there was in the past 4 years or so. So we're excited about what we see coming up.
So what's your favorite part about construction? How did you get in that business? I mean, a lot of guys grow up, they want to be a cowboy, fireman, policeman, rock star. You knew construction?
My family's in the design business, and I grew up kind of around the construction process, but just grew up working summer jobs on construction sites throughout high school and college, and just enjoyed that process and just decided to go into the construction field.
Now, you guys have done some sports venues, isn't that right?
We have. We've had the fortunate opportunity to do all the work at Turner Field for the past 15 years and renovations, including the SunTrust Club, Superior Plumbing Suites, everything that's happened at Turner Field over the last 15 years.
Now, are you okay with them going to Cobb, or is that mixed feelings?
I think it's mixed feelings. I think either way, we hope to be involved in the next step of that. I think regardless of where they are, they're the Atlanta Braves. They represent our metro Atlanta area. And even though they'll be 15 minutes up the road, I think they're still the Atlanta Braves. And we hope to be part of the new stadium and in pursuit of that right now.
Somebody in an earlier conversation, I think he was talking about sports being cyclical. The construction business, I mean, you can't come up with anything more cyclical than that, can you? I mean, what is it like trying to navigate that?
You just kind of expect a downturn every 5 or 6 years, and the market has its ebbs and flows, and I don't know if you ever get used to it, but you make it through it.
And so that means you must do more than sports venues, right?
We do. We're a lot of our success is attributed to our diversity in markets. We play in several different markets. We do a lot of corporate work. Two of our longest term clients over the past 25 years have been the Coca-Cola Company, Delta Airlines, several other corporate clients. We are very heavy into the educational market. We do a lot of work at Emory University, Georgia Tech, Georgia State, and most recently Clemson University and University of South Carolina. We also do industrial work, criminal justice, federal work. So our diversification has allowed us to make it through the downtimes.
So how does the sales and marketing thing work with you? You can't go knock on doors. You can't send white papers. How do you sell your stuff?
Our best sell is the current projects we're doing. Fortunately, over 70% of our work is for repeat clients like the Coca-Cola Company, Emory University, and we make sure after we finish that first job, they're inviting us back to the next job, whether it's the next year or 2 years down the road.
That good work is a good selling tool.
it's great sales. And once you get a name in each of the different markets, you have opportunities to, you know, get involved with other clients.
So now, as New South, obviously the South is a region that's important to you guys. How do you expand into, you know, you mentioned Clemson. How'd you get out of Atlanta and into these other markets?
Geographically, as we grow as a company, two ways. One, our existing clients ask us to go other places and do work for them. The markets we're in, whether it's educational or sports, there's opportunities that that our resources allow us to expand and move into the Carolinas, to Florida, the surrounding states. And so we have a fairly aggressive geographical growth plan.
Now, when you're working like in a new area, like the first time you did a sports venue, how do you attack that? Like, how do you get the learning curve up and going so they trust you to take a shot at something new that you hadn't done before?
Well, we have to spend the upfront time getting to know the market, the subcontractors, the vendors in the area. So we do a lot of upfront work as it pertains to that. We send the basic resources, our management supervision, and then we depend on local resources predominantly to get the work done.
Yeah, I want to hear more about that because I get the sense that it's been a while since you've actually swung a hammer. You're primarily generating results with and through other people. What is it like leading an organization of that size, and how do you get them all going in the same direction on projects that, I mean, if you get something out of square, the whole opera falls apart, right?
Right, right. Well, I'm a strong believer in surrounding yourself with the experts in each field, whether that's the subcontract trades, whether it's the management staff under me. There's many days I wish I was out there swinging a hammer, but I'm not allowed to do that anymore.
And so a lot of it has to do with the quality of the talent that you bring on board, but you've got to set the tone, you got to set the direction, do you put a lot of energy and effort? Is that where a lot of your time is invested, is creating that map?
The general philosophy of our company, which New South Construction was started in 1990 by me, we have a long tenure of resources and staff at our company that know our basic, the way we do business every day. And we pass that down to the next generation or next level of management to make sure that they're moving forward with the same culture, the same approach to our clients and our projects.
Well, that's where my primary question
right,
is.
Right, like how do you get that to disseminate from top to bottom? Right.
It's the dilution that I...
Well, we clearly spell out the way we do our business. We have just been through a strategic plan and defining where we want to be, how we want to do our business, and we clearly spell out what our vision is, how we're going to treat our clients, how we're going to... treat our subcontractors in the culture of our company. And whereas we've always passed it down just in operations, we've spelled it out in writing so that those graduates coming out of college right now know how we do our business and what our expectations are and how we treat people.
So you're on one hand, you're looking forward, right? And
right.
Then you're also taking that forward look and then trying to disseminate the culture and philosophy of, because that's in order to get forward, you have to get the today right.
Exactly.
So now, what is this kind of strategic growth plan that you have?
We have a plan to, set us up for the next 25 years of success. We'll be celebrating this time next year our 25th anniversary. As some of us grow older, get more gray hair, and start coming to the sunset of our careers, we want to make sure that we've set the next generation of leadership at New South Construction up to succeed. And that's through growth of our company, through making sure our core principles are established and carried forward into that next generation of leadership.
Now, what's a core? Can you share a core mission or purpose?
Our core purpose is to provide the best construction services to our clients and be the best in our industry and be the best in the way we treat our business, we treat people again, and how we approach each project we do.
And the key to all that is that when decisions come in front of you, if they're not consistent with reaching that purpose, then the answer is no, or not now, right?
Yeah, if they don't meet that strategic plan of the type project, the approach, the market it's in, then we decline.
And that's when you know you've got a vision, a mission that's really meaningful, when you're using it to make critical decisions.
Right, right.
So my father was a high school basketball coach growing up. My mother doesn't give my kids a lot of advice, but both of my daughters, the one piece of advice is, whatever you do, don't marry a coach. Now, I'm thinking your advice will be different because you didn't make a lot of money in those days. But your counsel to people, young people, that want to enter into the construction industry, would you encourage that? And if so, what other counsel might you have to offer?
I would encourage it. I'd encourage, if that's where your passion is, do what you love. Do what's going to make you want to get excited about waking up every morning. I get excited about the projects we build because we've had the opportunity to do some wonderful projects. And through those projects, the relationships we create with various people. So I think you've got to have that construction mind. You've got to enjoy seeing the fruits of your labor, seeing the building that you are part of. So I would encourage people to get in the industry. May not be as exciting as going to the club and some of the earlier stuff we heard, but there's a fulfillment and an excitement that
when that job's over, you guys must stand back and just be so proud because you get to see the finished product.
We do, and we can see that it's being used for the purpose it was built, whether it's a church or a school. The end product is being utilized to educate students or to for religious purposes or for people to go watch a baseball game.
So intellectually, I can really identify with what you guys are saying. I think I would just beam with pride at the completion of a project of something like you're describing. But the mental picture that I keep getting is this rabbit trap that I built when I was 12 years old. It's not something that anyone in here would be proud of. Well, keep up the good work. I think it's fantastic what you're doing. What do you need? How can we help? Do you need more young people to get involved in the industry and or your company specifically? Do you need help getting the word out about your work? What do you need?
We do. I think there's a perception that construction is not a good career, and we've put a lot of work. I've been very involved in some of the educational programs. Construction is a good career. It's not a last choice career, and there's a lot of satisfaction. The salary levels are very good in the just the enjoyment, the satisfaction of what people do. I think we need to shift to where, we do have people coming into our industry because we are facing a shortage of the true skilled worker.
Right, and the craftsman, right?
The craftsman is a dying breed, and I think it's going to affect everything we do because the construction industry is one of the biggest industries in the world.
So now, if you're a young person, what should you be doing to prepare for a career in construction?
I think getting the experience of, actually building, knowing how it goes together, and then as you move into management, just learning as much as you can. Technology is changing in our industry, and just keep current with what's changing and find good mentors to allow you to continue your career.
How's that for a theme? Is this mentoring thing?
Mentoring seems to be a common thread.
Yeah, you should get one.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking.
So where can our listeners go to learn more, Doug?
They can go to our website at www.newsouthconstruction.com. See everything about us, the markets we're in, where we're going, and, the fun we have. We do actually have fun. We do a lot of social activities, so our website can kind of show you all those things.
Outstanding. Well, thanks so much for coming down and visiting with us, man.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. Hang with us. We got some other folks to visit with.
Okay.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us Mark Anthony Borelli. He's Managing Director and Principal with CFA. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, we are delighted to have you. CFA, I think the F has something to do with money, doesn't it?
Well, it's Corporate Finance Associates. And like you say, selling businesses or buying businesses usually involves money.
So you work both sides of that equation, buying and the selling?
Yes, we do. Primarily sell side, but we do buy side as well. Just depends what the client is looking for.
So now how'd you get into this?
I got into it years ago. My parents sold their business, and it went horribly wrong, and I figured I was going to learn from their mistakes.
Right, don't do that anymore.
So
Do you have a sweet spot, a typical particular kind of business, or I don't even genre the right word that you specialize
an
in?
Industry?
No, we're industry agnostic. We specialize 10 to 50 million. Mm-hmm. We feel most companies in that space need more help than they realize. And while all of us amongst the firm, we've covered just about every industry going.
What's a mistake? Like if somebody thinks they can do it themselves?
That's usually a big one. And
is that what your parents did?
Yes. And I think the other biggest mistake is they don't realize everything that is involved, and they just leave themselves open.
Because this is probably the only time they've done this, right?
Right.
Whereas, like, you do this all the time.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know where the landmines are.
A classic example is I always tell clients, never come to the negotiations. Tell your lawyers and your bankers what you want and let us go negotiate. You just go run your business because the guy on the other side of the table cannot make a decision. He has to go back to a committee, a board.
Right.
And every time you say something, it's carved in stone. Well, why do this?
So why lose that leverage?
Right.
So that's just good overarching counsel right then and there. What are some other mistakes? You've had to see it all. You've had to see some patterns emerge. What are some other mistakes that you've seen along the way?
I think they just don't get prepared. You know, I always say perception is reality, and everybody says, no, reality is reality. But it is perception. So simple things like they're not ready, and when they get hit with requests for information, they just get overwhelmed. They can't cope. They don't clean up things.
Like what does clean up things mean?
You get their numbers reviewed or audited. You know, people, because they do it all themselves, entrepreneurs are very involved in their business. They think they know it all. But an outside person can't see what's in their head, and you got to try and get it out of their head and onto paper.
Right.
And so they're just not expecting. I mean, simple things. I've even had clients where you drive up, and half the letters in their name are missing from the sign above their building, and you're like, that's not right. And they go, well, nobody ever comes here. No, but the buyer's going to come
buyer's
here.
Gonna
and if he sees that, it means you don't care. And if you don't care, why should he care?
Right. Now, is there ever the case that the entrepreneur overvalues what they think the business is worth?
Nah. Never.
I deal with that on a basically daily basis.
So yes. Managing expectations is a big part of your job?
Yes. I'm actually writing a blog at the moment, and I'm saying why selling your business is like dating at 50 in this current age. You know, you're going to put out a profile of the company like you do on the internet when you're doing a dating site. Be realistic. You know, you're not Brad Pitt. Just be realistic of who you are. Put your best light on it, but don't lie.
Uh-huh. Do you hear the parallels here? I know you do. It sounds like, you know, if the for sale by owner. We're going to visit with a couple of folks from Solid Source Realty this morning in a little while. But there's so many parallels to like the whole bit of marketing a house, you know, getting the property ready and just thinking your house is worth too much. It'd be interesting to.
Do you ever get a case where the person undervalues their business?
Sometimes, yeah. They don't truly understand the assets they have, so they'll be selling a business, and they'll be looking at the value the business provides, but they have some asset they've truly not appreciated that a buyer will pay them a lot of money for.
Right, and you have that insight because you deal with businesses all the time.
Right, so we try and go through them. We spend a lot of time understanding their business, going through, A, their financials, but then also all their assets, and who would be interested in thinking, I hate to use the expression outside the box, but
right.
Is there somebody that would really appreciate this that they haven't thought of?
The entrepreneur may not have thought of.
Right.
Now, when would a company engage with you? Like, it can't be a month before they want to sell, right?
Oh, well, some do, unfortunately. I often get a call, we've started talking. Can you help us? And yes,
we can. Oh, they're already in it.
But
that's probably not optimal.
No, in an ideal world, I would say 2 years before you even want to sell.
2 years?
Oh, so you're interested in talking to companies well before there's a transaction going to
occur. Well, like I said, this whole cleaning up process, I say it takes about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And clients say, well, we can do it quicker. Yes, but you still have a business to run on a daily basis, and I don't want to suck you away from that. So if we do it over 2 years, we can do it slowly and properly. You know, find out the things that are bad, fix them or understand what they are, make things better. You know, a typical thing, I've got a client right now who doesn't like the value we've told him his company's worth. And I said, but you don't even have a budget. You're trying to tell us how much it's worth, and you don't do a budget for any year. So how does any buyer know what you're worth? And
right.
Your track record doesn't look fantastic. It's not bad, but it's not great. Yet you suddenly want this magical number. So, you know, do board minutes, do budgets, do strategy. As Doug just said, you lay it out there so people can actually see what the vision for the future is. You know, a typical entrepreneur, the other problem is you say, what's their strategy? To sell my business. No, that's your strategy. That's not the company's strategy.
Right, exactly.
The company needs its own strategy for the future. So
there's some sort of multiplier effect or multiple and is it different in different industries? Like just for sake of argument, you've got a $3 million company. You don't necessarily sell it for $3 million, right? There's some other math that goes into that.
Right.
Even once you're sure that it really is a $3 million company.
Yeah. The industry standard is a number called EBITDA, which is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization, and it's a proxy for cash flow. And then it gets a multiple put on it, and the multiple is dependent on a number of factors. One is the size. you know, 1 million EBITDA is less than a 3 million, which is less than a 5, which is less than a 10. And the reason for that is the bigger the number is, the more inherent sustainability, let's say the inertia the company seems to have. It'll survive knocks better.
Right.
If you're 1 million, you get a big knock, you're dead. The other thing is the industry you're in. If it's a really hot industry, you know, biotech right now, really hot. People pay more money because they're trying to get it. And then what is the growth rate? You know, the key things people look at is what is the company strategy? What is its, what we call sustainable competitive advantage? What makes it better than the others and we'll keep it there? What is the management team like? And a typical thing with entrepreneurs is you meet them and you say, what's your management team like? Oh, the best bunch of guys. They're great. And you say, okay, who makes all the client decisions? I do. Does your management team ever see any financials? God, no. I wouldn't show them the numbers. And you go through this, and in the end you say, you don't have a management team. You just have a bunch of people. You tell them what to do. You have a job, and I cannot sell a job. I can only sell a company, so you got to take them up. And so that's a big key factor.
So now when someone's trying to sell their business, are you telling them basically get out of the way and that you're kind of driving a lot of this stuff? I mean, the part of your counsel is that you've done this so many times that – you're trying to protect them from themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I think what we do is we work through all the scenarios with them, and we always ask them what they want to do because we're not going to tell them to get out the way and just run it. But it's like, leave us to do what we do. We keep you copied on it. We keep you involved. We will bring you in all the time we need you. But really, just keep focus on your business.
Right.
Because what happens also with a lot of people is...
because that's the worst thing is they stop doing what they're doing. Their business gets worse because
exactly.
They're not... selling, they're not doing all the stuff they need to do, and then it's harder for you to sell it because now it has less earnings.
Well, what happens is they get involved, and the numbers, as you said, go down, and then you get to closing, and whoever the buyer is has said, I want your monthly numbers right through the closing, and they suddenly come back and say, you know, sales are down 5%, we're dropping the price. And the owner's sitting there going, why?
Oh,
well,
right.
You know, focus on your business.
So structuring these deals, it's not always, here's a check for your 3 million times multiple. You could do all kind of cool stuff, right? What are some examples?
Well, it depends on what we're doing. We always try and work with clients. What's their best after-tax position? So we're one of the unique firms in that we not only look at M&A from selling to either a strategic company or a private equity group, but we also do ESOPs, which is a very tax-efficient structure.
There go those acronyms.
I know, sorry. It's an employee share option scheme.
Okay.
But under the federal government.
Scheme?
Or plan.
Let's call it plan.
Scheme has semantic weight here in the United States. It doesn't so much cross the pond.
I think the P stands for plan. I didn't write the legislation. But it has great tax advantages. I mean, for instance, if it's a C company for tax purposes, there's no capital gains tax to the shareholders by itself. So we look at that, and then the question is, you know, either the buyer will get some financing in, the seller may roll finance it some himself for a good interest rate return. There can be earnouts over time if he thinks there's future value in the company and he's staying on. It all, you know, how many ways do you want to make it? You know,
you're working with a company, especially if you can really get in a couple of years before they're ready to sell, do you make kind of recommendations like, hey, maybe you should be licensing this, maybe you should be doing something a little differently because this will give you more leverage down the road?
Yes. So we look at them, we work through their strategy and figure out what's going to give them the most return and what's the best thing. And we'll make suggestions. They don't have to take them, but we'll definitely suggest them.
Now, what do you do? Because in the news, all you hear is, oh, look, that company just sold for $1 billion and it's six guys in a garage somewhere. And then this person's going, well, I've been working 20 years and, you know, where's my...
$6 billion.
Because those things are, there's no EBITDA, there's no, you know, earnings, real earnings.
Right. And that's the hardest thing is trying to explain to people, you're not all Instagram, you're not all Facebook. What is it you have and why aren't you the same? And, you know, the typical thing is my friend John sold his business for $50 million. We should be worth $50 million. No, you're a different size, different industry, different business model, different margins. There's no reason you should be the same.
Right.
Know? So it kind of goes back to that dating thing. You know, you don't all look for the same person and they don't all look for you.
Right. And the things that make the news are the reason they make the news because they're so unusual.
Correct. Yeah.
So I asked this question a little bit earlier when we were visiting with Doug Davidson, but the sales and marketing thing, how does that work for you? Are you guys in the yellow pages or is it all referral type stuff?
It's pretty much all referrals. It's people we've worked with that like us and refer us in.
Because, I mean, you are really trusting someone. When you just open up the books, you hand them your laundry, and you're trusting them with your future and your legacy, this is not a casual transactional kind of thing between you and I if you're going to sell.
No, nobody wakes up in the morning and gets on the internet for who's the best M&A advisor. I think it's relationship. As I tell people, if they're talking to me, I say, you know, I think we offer excellent service, but at the end of the day, you got to be comfortable. You're going to trust my counsel. and I'm going to give you the best counsel you can get, and you're going to spend a lot of time in a small room with me, and you got to feel comfortable with that because we're going to be negotiating for many days.
So now, when do you get compensated? Like, am I paying you a retainer, or do you get a piece of whatever the selling price is?
Both. We get a very small retainer. As my first boss said, the passage of silver concentrates the mind. So we're all on the same page.
But write that down, Kevin.
But most of the money comes on the back end.
Uh-huh. So that's the thing for you. And I'm sure you turn down deals if you don't think that it can be achieved, right?
Oh, yeah, because we don't have more bandwidth.
You don't have the time,
and
right?
We don't want to waste time. Mm-hmm. So,
all right. Where can our listeners go to learn more?
www.cfaw, which stands for Corporate Finance Associates Worldwide, .com.
Well, thanks for coming down and visiting, man. I know I knew all this stuff, but Lee, this is all brand new to him.
I appreciate that.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
So what do you think we should sell for based on your experience so far? Don't answer that.
Yeah, don't answer on the on
but
air.
Do stay with us. We've got a couple more folks to visit with, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right. Now up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have the president with sales talent, and I'm sure he is one fine sales talent, Mr. Jack Scherer. How did I say that right? Lean on in there and make that microphone do.
You did it right. You did it right.
All right. So tell us a little bit about this. This is a consulting, a training firm. What are you out there doing?
Well, our primary mission is working with companies, both in Atlanta and throughout the U.S., finding the top sales talent for their particular companies. We work for about 25 different industries. And got into this business. I was in the advertising business for about 15 years, owned magazines, newspaper, and direct marketing company. And the common element there was always find very, very difficult to find good sales talent. Pareto time principle, if we hire 10 people, out of that 10 people, two are going to generate about 80% of the sales. So I said, why don't I start a business that goes out and finds top sales talent for various companies? Because they're very hard to find. One of our unique selling points is we measure DNA. So there's a lot of people that interview people, and they do quite well in their interviewing process. And because someone interviews well, looks well, dresses very, very well, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be a good salesperson. It means they interviewed well. So there was a study done out of the University of Michigan that I read, and it said if you use some type of DNA assessment, you can get to the heart of the lion. You can determine what the passion for that person is if they really like to sell.
I'll tell you what, if that's true, it's encouraging. I mean, I'm a little skeptical. I got to be honest with you. But
right. So we're measuring DNA. We measure about 12 characteristics of a person's personality. If we give 5 tests, we'll find one person to pass it. Even though the other 4 or 5 have great-looking resumes and they have a track record, supposedly, in being a great salesperson.
So you can't train a person with the wrong DNA to be a great salesperson?
I don't think you can. I think the key is you have to be – it's like being an entrepreneur. Because someone goes to gets their MBA from Harvard doesn't mean they're a great entrepreneur. I have clients that have 8th-grade educations. They're multimillionaires that were able to develop a business – see the angle, the competitive mental angle in that business, and work very hard to achieve their goal.
So beyond a salt and pepper hairdo, a charming southern accent, and a continually sunny disposition, what are the signs of an excellent salesperson?
2 things. There are many, many, many books written about this, and probably the best one is called The Successful Salesperson, and it was written by a person by the name of Greenberg. And what he did is he analyzed 10,000 salespeople that sold life insurance and straight commission for about 5 years and created this matrix to determine the people that were successful and the ones that were not successful. And what he came up with is this, and it's very interesting. He said all great salespeople only have 2 characteristics. 1, high ego drive. They need to get up every single day and want to win the national championship, whatever that means. It's not driven by money. It's driven by the passion to win. And you can't give someone, you can't teach ego drive. The second element was high degree of empathy, Greek word empathy meaning pain, that when you have high degree of empathy, you deliver a strong element of trust. So, you know, the majority of sales can be won or lost. The majority of interviews are usually won or lost in the first 5 minutes because the ability of that person to communicate trust and to really care about the person they're working for and not trying to sell them something. Thing that changed my life was one sentence, and it's in my book, chapter in my book. It said, every sale is really a solution to a problem. So what we have to do is we don't go out and sell things, we solve problems. Any great salesperson really looks at what the problems can be are by asking good probing questions and then trying to understand the solutions that person can deliver to solve those problems. The problem with most salespeople is they talk too much. We do a lot of seminars and we say, well, what do you all think about salespeople? And most of the response is very negative. And why? Well, too pushy, talk too much, they're after my money, and I do not trust them. So it comes down to delivering trust and solving problems.
So now, since you've been doing this for some time, can you tell at a glance, or do you have to go through these tests?
Well, it's hard to judge people on first impressions, but what I look for is...
Well, you just said in first 5 minutes
Right. That's basically what they say. Within 5 minutes you can tell. It doesn't mean it's necessarily right, but we get first impressions, right or wrong. And we look for passion, but then we would say, well, Bob, would you mind taking a sales assessment profile for us? And they said, sure. So we give it, it's online, we get back a score like an SAT test, and we determine whether they've got the right DNA. The problem with most hiring decisions in the United States of America and hiring salespeople can be broken down about three different things. Number one, they hire industry experience. Because you sold green widgets for 5 years and it shows it on your resume doesn't mean you did it well. It means you did it for 5 years. The other thing is...
That's a good point.
That the other, what people don't look at is hire the athlete, teach them the sport. So if you're good at selling advertising... That's a service that could be transferable to selling accounting services because they're both
right.
Business services, right? So the majority of people are trying to make the quick fix by hiring the industry experience versus the true DNA sales talent.
So why so much turnover in this arena? Is it because people are not good at it or they think they're going to be good at it for a while or they run out of gas? But I mean, there's a great deal of turnover, right?
Great question.
That was a fantastic question.
Great. You got 100 points on that one.
Because how about the answer? How great is that going to be?
I study that and say, okay, sales by the very nature of the beast has the highest turnover of any industry in the United States. And there's one reason for it. At the end of 22 working days in each month, you have a score after your name. You either hit quota or you didn't hit quota. If I'm an HR manager, a financial planner, or administrative assistant, I'm not being measured quantitatively in some type of number. 80% of all salespeople in America failed to reach their quota regardless of industry. And the reason is they're being hired the wrong way. They're being hired on industry experience versus true DNA sales talent.
Now, does this DNA natural sales talent present itself like in high school? Or is this after you've had some business experience?
Well, no, we're measuring. We're getting college graduates from Georgia State, Auburn, University of Georgia, et cetera. And you know, a lot of college graduates, and probably most of all, would agree with this: is they don't really know what they want to do. I mean, they got a degree in journalism from the University of Georgia. Well, I want to be a writer. I want to sell advertising. So we say maybe this person does have true natural ability to sell. We give them our assessment tool. And we find out they've got the right potential, the right passion, the right stuff to make it work. And then we can take that person and market it to a particular company.
Now, before we wrap, you mentioned a book earlier in the conversation. Mm-hmm. Speak to that a little bit more. What's the book about? What compelled you to write it?
Well, I was selling advertising door-to-door for 10 years. And had 9 people that somehow I convinced them to do the same thing because it wasn't fun. You got a lot of door slammed in your face. And I say, well, why are people successful and why aren't they successful? So I start taking notes over a period of about 4 or 5 years and wrote a book called 21 Laws of Sales Success. And it's what I determined in the streets to be the core elements of success in selling, 2 or 3 of them being trust. 80% of all sales are lost because the salesperson failed to communicate trust. Sell to the heart before you sell to the head. The second is sell value, not low price. Salespeople come to me and say, well, I didn't get the deal because I didn't have the lowest price. Well, more times than not, the prospect is not buying the lowest price. They're buying the best perceived value. So then from the book, we do seminars, and we developed a game called the Best and Brightest Sales Game, and people play the sales game, and they're able to determine who is the best and brightest salesperson in a particular company.
But that person is only the person if they have the right DNA.
Correct.
So the first step is always to assess the DNA to make sure that they're even it's a possibility they can be a salesperson.
That's exactly right.
And is that that's your process when you go to market?
Sure is. So they say, why hire a sales talent? There are about 400 recruiting firms in Atlanta. I say, well, hire our firm because, number one, we specialize in sales, and number two, we could measure sales DNA and eliminate the people that can just interview well.
Is that your first step? You get an engagement? You give everybody in the firm the test, and then you're like, well, get rid of these 13 guys?
Well, we get an engagement. It's called benchmarking, and we do that. We say, give me your top two salespeople. Let's benchmark them, see what they've got from a psychological profile, and we can benchmark over those key elements.
And then, but then you do implement some form of that, right?
Correct.
Where you're trying to get only the best people or the people who match the profile of the best people?
Correct. And then the other thing we do, we value add customized sales training programs. So because someone has good sales talent, you just can't throw them out there and say, well, go out and sell. There's got to be some type of track to run on that's a methodical system to prospect, present, and close. And a lot of companies don't have that. They think, well, we hired someone with industry experience. Let's put them out there, and they're going to be successful, and that isn't necessarily right.
And so what's the best way if somebody wants to learn more about your firm?
We have a real complicated website. It's called www.salestalent.com.
And can they learn more about your book on the website?
Yes, it's on the website, 21 Laws of Sales Success.
Well, that's been fun, inspiring, but I got to be honest, scared me a little bit too. As a guy who has to hire sales talent to help our organization grow, you got me a little nervous there, man.
We can help you.
Well, thanks so much for coming down and visiting with us. That is a thoroughly enjoyable conversation, man.
Thanks for inviting me. Have
yes,
a great
sir.
Day.
Stay with us now. We got some folks with Solid Source that we're going to visit with. Next up, it's the Real Estate Hour, Lee.
That's right.
It's the slot we've all been waiting
for.
The
headliner.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We have a crack team from Solid Source Realty led by CEO Michelle Velchek. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. We're excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. If I can't compliment you on anything else, just how patient you are. I mean,
I've really enjoyed this. I've been taking copious notes during the interviews. This has been wonderful.
Well, Michelle, why don't you share with our listeners a little bit about Solid Source, because you're one of the great success stories of Atlanta.
Well, thank you. Solid Source, we opened in 2003, so we're one of the oldest and most established real estate companies here now, which is wonderful because I was just starting out too at one point. And now we have more agents than any other firm in the city. We do over 8,000 transactions a year. We sell over $1 billion worth of real estate each year, and it's really just a blessing to be here, to be able to be excited with the agents. The market's hot now. Everyone's jumping back into real estate, so it's a great time to be in the real estate market.
So the market is hot. It's right now is a good time.
It's incredible.
Because it's very cyclical, too. We've had that. We've talked about that in a couple of other conversations. It's kind of up and down, but right now it's
I would say cyclical is a very polite word. Really, when you look at what's happened, you know, from 2008 to 2011, you could call it cyclical. You could call it a devastation.
I was trying to be polite. Okay, backstory. Tell us how all this got started. And full disclosure for our listeners, Lee and I had an opportunity at a Thai event to sit down at a table and get to know Michelle a little bit. So we have a little inkling of this backstory, and it's why they're here. I want our listeners to hear how you got this thing off the ground. Will you share that with us?
Absolutely. Thank you. It's funny because Solid Source, when we were talking earlier, it really is a solution to a problem. And so for real estate agents, we are independent contractors, and so we actually pay a broker to work there. And so every real estate agent that you know is paying a broker to work there. And when Solid Source started in 2003, it was really founded to address that issue. I've been a real estate investor for over 20 years, and so I love that. That's my passion. And so it just didn't seem right that I was going to have to give up a lot of commission or have to go to weekly meetings if really I just wanted my license to be able to be an investor. And so that's the way it started. And just from from my own background, I'm very, very passionate about being debt-free. And that's how we met.
Yeah,
that was
our
meeting.
That really stuck with me, yeah.
And so that's how I was invited to the TAI event, is they were interviewing debt-free companies and how we grew our business debt-free. And that's really been our primary commitment. And when we talk about the market devastation, even in 2008, you know, when we first got started, we had just one agent. That was me.
They were a good one.
That's right. Good. We were honest. I was debt-free. Really, I was able to maintain that. The DNA. And to your point, Jack, I had worked in corporate America before with Pfizer and then C.R. Bard. I had been in the military, which paid my way through college. And so that was the one thing that real estate seemed to be missing, was that not corporate structure like the box and the red tape, but really just the freedom to be able to express yourself and be able to get in front of clients and be individual and be independent and really say, hey, listening to what you need, I have some ideas, but it's not just putting you in that same corporate box. And so it was very exciting. And the more, but I will say some great things about Pfizer and C.R. Bard. It gave me the ideas. You know how you always see the pharmaceutical reps in your doctor's office? What do we always have? Marketing material, a book, you know, we're turning pages. And so that's really what we brought to the real estate market. We are always looking at technologies and different industries and bringing them into a traditionally very paper-heavy, non-technology industry. We went paperless in 2006. We were the first paperless real estate company in the nation. And the way we met is we've stayed debt-free. So when many companies were literally going out of business and going bankrupt in those devastating times, those were the times that SolidSource really, you know, got on top of the hill.
Okay, enough of you already.
Let's talk to somebody else's turn.
You brought some folks with you, and your right-hand person is sitting at your right hand. So would you
introduce her? Yes, she is. Rebecca Meredith is the president of both of our firms, SolidSource Realty and SolidSource Realty Georgia. She is super smart.
Thank you.
And when I have a question, that's who I ask. And I couldn't agree with Doug earlier, who was saying that you have to surround yourself with good people. And that's exactly that's who you're meeting here. But Rebecca is a person that is very detail oriented, very law oriented, but also one of the most creative people I've ever met. So, Rebecca.
Hi. I'm interested to know, and lean right in there and talk to the very end of that microphone as you answer, but why SolidSource? Because you obviously, from what she's describing, you probably could have joined virtually anybody you wanted to. What compelled you to be a part of this SolidSource family?
Well, one thing that I love about SolidSource is how we're always innovative and forward-thinking and using different technologies from different industries. And we look at other things other than technology as well, just any ideas that we can bring in and help everyone grow.
Now, who else did you have with you?
Well, I have Brian Cowling, and Brian was an agent at SolidSource first. And you know how sometimes you do meet those great salespeople, like Jack was saying? And so when I met Brian, we were just completely just inseparable from that point for a while, as he came over from another large real estate firm, did exceptional in sales, but then during the market devastation, there was some great opportunity for us to be able to bring inside some of the great sales talent. And so brought Brian in. We have a great story that we can talk about offline, but the way that all that happened, certainly a God story, but it's really just been unbelievable. And so many of our new technology ideas is really from Brian leading our research and development in new ways to make our company something very different than the standard real estate companies in Atlanta.
So Brian, can you talk a little bit about what you do to help SolidSource?
Well, definitely. And I'll tell you what, this morning has been fascinating to listen to some of the things as we've gone through. So great progression, and I've enjoyed it very much. But I think what we think about when we think about research and development is other companies. You don't necessarily think about, well, what do you need that for in real estate? It's right. It's always the same. But if you do take a look at other industries, and you know, I've been in many different companies, so you kind of take that experience and bring it over and look at, you know, you walk in and you see a check and it's being given to somebody and they give it right back. real estate traditionally is a paper-heavy industry, as sure. Michelle mentioned. And you know what? It's great to save trees. That wasn't our initial goal. But we always like to say that we're trying to keep paper cuts, you know, go ahead and solve the world's problems with paper cuts. But right now in our office, you can actually submit earnest money as a client and never use a paper check. So thinking about what is a way to save time and save money for every single person in the industry, that's really our passion.
And you're taking these best practices from whatever industry they may come from, and you're just trying to implement it in yours, right?
Lee, that's really the difference. If you were to say, really, what does SolidSource, why do so many agents in Atlanta choose SolidSource first? That's why. We're just always asking. Rebecca brought it up last week. She said, really, agents are just always asking, what's next? And they don't have to worry about researching on their own. Even though they are independent contractors, right. They always know that is our number one goal is what's next. And we call it the toy and the Happy Meal philosophy.
That's right.
Is that the toy and the Happy Meal changes every week. Mm. Why? Because that's what keeps people coming back.
That's right.
And we think the more that we can bring to the table for our agents to be able to offer buyers and sellers, that's really our job, is to serve them.
Well, and you guys the relationship, you've got to work at least two different kinds of relationships. You have the end user, the home buyer relationship that you have to cultivate and continue to nurture. But then you have to build and maintain relationships with all these people in your ecosystem, right? The builders, the repair people, the mortgage people. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, actually, I can. My name is Michelle Gardner, and I am the executive relationship director.
Oh,
so
Lydia.
That is what I am.
That's right. She's happy to speak to that.
I am happy to speak to people. It's just really a pleasure. I have a servant heart, and I love to serve people, and I love to talk to people. So when the opportunity arose, I couldn't say no. And just being with SolidSource, always being on the cutting edge, I know we keep hearing that and saying that, but we are. I've been licensed for a long time in this industry in the Atlanta area, and to be with a company that grows daily and that requires knowledge, you just have to grasp it. And it's not for everybody, like Jack was saying. There is a DNA.
There is a DNA. And so another comment to that is, when we are working with builders, and how do we do that? It's still back to Jack. It's talking about empathy. Mm-hmm. It's listening. Mm-hmm. And it's teaching agents. It's constantly providing training that's not just teaching folks how to sell and how to close. It's teaching folks how to listen and be sensitive and have empathy and be excited that you're helping someone. Money follows that. If you're ever chasing the dollar, unfortunately, that never ends well. And a lot of times you do wind up in a salary job. Mm-hmm. And that's really not what most sales folks want. And so for us to be able to provide that and really look for people that are in our character zone for our journey. A lot of real estate companies, really, I started taking notes and I thought, gosh, I've got to read your book, Jack, really, because it sounds like exactly what we do. But we really look for real estate agents that have they're in our character lane. And when we say that, we mean that if they say they're going to do something, they'll do it. They're honest. It's okay to say you don't know.
Right.
Or
say you're not a good fit.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. And sometimes I hate to say, you have to fire your client or say no.
Right.
You have to say no. If it's someone that's trying to hide something that's wrong with their house or paint over a water stain, that is not our type of client. We really do. We just have a lot of wonderful, wonderful people around us. And to Mark's point, too, we do really have a leadership team. It is not me that makes the decisions. Actually, every time I think I know the final answer, I'll always say, so, Rebecca, what do you do? Really, am I missing something? But that's wonderful because it really lets all of us be in our zone of being super creative, or for Michelle Gardner, just being able to create new relationships, being able to create new training opportunities. It's just such a great place, and we're in such a great place as far as the industry goes now, too.
So what's next for you guys? Continued growth? You're going to continue to recruit more agents or open more offices, or what do you got in mind?
It's funny. Every time you talk about growth, like you said, there's so many different ways to grow.
Yeah.
And I think that last year we went through this major transformation. We read a great book, a shout out to David Salyers and Dr. Randy Ross. It's called Remarkable. And when we read that book, it really transformed our company. And it gave us the courage and the focus, just what we were just saying about the character being so important. And it's really funny that we just had the most successful year that we've had since we've been opened. And so you know, kudos to our staff, to our agents, being in that zone. But you know what I believe is that when you're always looking at what's next, and Mark doesn't want to hear this, but we don't want to sell the company, so it's okay. but really, so many times when you're doing the best that you can, the door that needs to open next surfaces. It really does. And so when you're debt-free, you're not always trying to make a quota or make it up. We're not a franchise organization, so we're not having to ring a bell for a franchise box or ring a quota. We're really just trying to provide the best service available because, boy, if we had set a goal back in 2008, think about how terrible we would have looked if we had shareholders, you know, to that. So we know that if we're just always focused on training our agents, focused on providing the best that we can to clients, really, you know, the success, the direction sometimes follows that.
This is an invigorating conversation. I'm fired up, but we're about out of time. Before we wrap, I want to make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch, learn more about Solid Source, website, email, whatever's appropriate for
Wonderful.
That.
Well, our website is solidsource.com. You can find out all about us on that site. If you were to ask, like you did to the other folks attending today, you know, what can our listeners do? List your house. Okay, list your house. And really, so many people that have been underwater for so long, you know, when the market went down, you guys, now if your house really is just clean, okay, if it is just clean, like you said, you certainly want to have, you know, everything put together and vacuum, you know, put the dogs outside. But if it's just clean, we can sell it because the market, my stars, some of the houses right now that go on the market sell in a few days. And so the best thing you can do is no matter what someone told you a few years ago, the market has increased significantly. So please let us sell your home.
And Michelle, if I can add to that, when you go check out the website, be sure to check out the About Us page because we have so much exciting stuff going on in Africa right now. We've got several videos that you can take a look at. And you know what? Michelle doesn't like to talk about herself, but she's the passion and the drive behind what happens there. We've all been there to go take that trip and walk down these dirt roads and go see these children. But being able to see somebody that is walking 3.5 miles one way to dig into a dry riverbed to get the water for today is
our most recent project with water. It was 5,000 people in Muvukoni, just south of Kenya.
And so to see now the video on there, and this gets me choked up every time I say it, but to see the video of people standing there with a look of bewilderment on their face as water is coming out of the ground in their village.
And they've never seen it.
I don't want to leave this. We're not going to. I'm sorry. We're going to run over just for a couple of minutes. I want to hear more about this. So the impact of this, what kind of.
That's what we do. Yeah. And we love to serve the community as well. We have a lot of Atlanta-based projects. But where is our heart? It's in Africa. We have another ministry in Uganda where I always call it the inside out ministry because you know how some folks will support missionaries going door to door. It's kind of inside out. We bought land for soccer fields. It's a huge soccer project. And so now over 1,000 kids get to play soccer, but they're mentor coaches that are really growing them into the young men that they need to be, as opposed to so many folks really just following in the shoes of maybe their fathers in Africa. Mm-hmm. And so many changes, so many heart changes taking place there. We put a school in a small village in Zambia a few years back, and that's the one that still chokes me up sometimes, just because Zambia is not like some of the places in Africa that they'll go 6 months every year without a drop of water.
Wow.
And so to be able to help them develop that school and then put water there and get sustainability plans. That's how we get involved with ministries is my first question is always, what's your exit strategy? Because I need to know that before we need, you know, before we decide how long our meeting is. just because really it's not about providing fish. It's about teaching people to fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Brian, I'm glad you piped up and said something about it. We could do a whole show on this. I already said I was inspired and and intrigued, but I genuinely am inspired by the work you're doing in this arena.
Thank you. We love it. That's why we do what we do.
And that's solidsource.com?
It is solidsource.com.
All right. Well, thanks to all our guests for being here today. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you.